Dawn Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT and the free Odyssey app.
Today, officers showed up to support the family. Outside the courthouse, Jimmy O'Connor V, in a police uniform with his dad's badge number in black, carrying on his father's legacy.
I mean, this is the only job I've ever really wanted in my entire life. You know, I mean, my grandfather started it pretty much, and he was a cop in, 1974. And then my dad took the same path, and I took the same path, and I never wanted to do anything else. And then when that happened, I only had maybe three, four years on the jobs, and I really did have a hatred for this type of, profession. Time did heal, and then I know that my dad would always want me to kind of get back to doing what I always loved.
O'Connor, his mom, and sister living without the man taken from them, standing together on a tough day that closes a chapter.
We know what Jimmy would want from us, and he would want us to live a really good life and keep living life, not be sad, and I'm sure he's very happy that this is behind us now.
So that was the O'Connor family, Terry O'Connor, her husband Jim, a corporal in the Philadelphia Police Department, 23 years with the department, and the last 15 years of his career, he worked in a highly elite SWAT unit. I told you yesterday about the fact that we were on air here. Zioli was in the mornings at that point, and we were getting the news from some of you. We weren't even right away reporting it because we were horrified and just in prayer for the family. We didn't know all the details, but it was March 13th, 2020, when Jim was murdered, shot and killed on the job while serving that early morning murder warrant on a guy that, by all accounts, should have already been behind bars. So joining me this morning, what an honor. Terry O'Connor is here, and we just want you to know we support you, and we support your beautiful family, your son and your daughter. Terry, I know that you, in fact, have testified before Congress talking about this issue that, and I have to ask you, as you even testified before Congress, this person, this, I'm not even saying his name, this scumbag, cop killer, murderer, other, took other lives as well, never should have even been out in the public that day that he took your husband's life.
Hi, good morning. Hi. Thanks for having me. Yeah, that's correct. I did. I mean, I've been speaking out as much as possible from the beginning because I've said from day one that these four of them should have never been out of jail. They were let go many times, lenient policies, slap on the hands, let go on known recognizance and lengthy, lengthy criminal history. And, again, shouldn't have been out there, but there they were. And, that would be our district attorney's problem, but he has his own version of it, of course.
Mm-hmm. So for you, one thing I wanted to also put out there was that I know that our sister station, KYW News Radio, we're in the same building here, and Kristen Johansson had reported that, in fact, she was in the courtroom. She had reported what I did not hear other news agencies really focusing on, and that was that yesterday during the sentencing of the 75-year sentence, there was an utterance that was loud enough for you all to hear that some felt was directed to the family, was disrespectful in general, as, the perpetrator, now convicted and confessed, was being led away.
Yes, I couldn't hear it exactly, but I asked, and they didn't want to tell me. And mm-hmm. then actually our commissioner had called me to ask me, and he didn't want to say it on the news unless mm-hmm. I cleared it. But once I asked, I had no problem because I'll start with, he, on his way out, he was smiling, smirking, and he said, "I'm smiling because I'm still breathing," as he looked over and just, with a big old smile looking at us. It was just disgusting because as they try to, his defense attorney, the way he tried to make it sound like he was, sorry for what he did. And he even spoke himself, which I was very shocked when the judge gave him the chance to speak, and he did. And he spoke that, basically, the way he was brought up, that this was all normal to them, that they thought this is just what we do in life. And, we grew up in a stable family, he said. He did not. So he basically thought that everything they were doing was just okay. That was, he said, well, violence didn't start with me. It didn't end with me. It's not going to end ever. It was just, I couldn't, he was making it out to be that it was okay what he did because that's what the neighborhood does. So, yeah, he had a tough upbringing, you know. The judge tried to say he was, you know, he was born no teen parent. Well, guess what? I was 19 when I had my son, and we made a lot of decisions that did not involve guns and violence. And, you know, and my, we went over yesterday, we said it multiple times, and I guess he actually did listen, because my daughter and him are the same age. So, and I said at 21, she didn't know what to do with herself either. And she joined the Air Force. She didn't pick up a gun.
Yeah.
And, you know, he had, and she, in her impact statement, she mentioned that he ruined her wedding, and, you know, it just, everything was a mess. And he had then mentioned at the end that he didn't know anybody that was married, because that's not how they grow up, and he's never been to a wedding, so he didn't understand, like, you know, it was just crazy. I couldn't believe he even spoke like that, honestly.
Yeah.
And then as soon as the 900, so it came down to months, they kept, you know, it was 75 years and 900 months. And as soon as he said it, as soon as the judge actually said it, he just looked over and smiled at all of us, like, he didn't care. I mean,
gross.
I can't even make, I don't know how they even put on a, you know, the words to say he, you know, he has remorse for this, but he just, you know, it was just horrible. It was horrible. He laughed. He shook his head. Like, he just, it was disgusting.
I'm sorry you had to see that. I wonder, though, moving forward, because you've advocated, which, by the way, that takes a lot after everything you've been through, your daughter, your son. But when you testified, and that was May of, obviously, it was 2024, actually, but, you know, when you think about going forth in the public and talking about these issues, whether the issue is how these individuals should be extracted from society, shouldn't even be out there in the first place, shouldn't get a 23-month sentence when they're a known violent, drug-dealing gangbanger, number one. But number two, what other measures, better bulletproof vests, but better equipment? I mean, what are you advocating for moving forward?
Well, I think that the police need to be able to do their job without being fear of being locked up. That's, you know, I would say I said that day, our DA worries more about arresting officers than he does about the criminals. He, you know, he wants to give them second, third, fourth, fifth, tenth chances. And cops, he's, you know, I think he like salivates, like he cannot wait to get them when something comes up. And it's just that they're afraid to do their job because of that. And I mean, it's, that, you know, the whole department has changed. People, they're not going to do anything anymore. And the criminals know that they have those rights, and they know they're going to be let out. And it's a joke. And I said that when I testified, like, people are delusional that we keep letting this man stay in office. Like I said, until it hits your family personally, you're really not going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand people make mistakes, but this is, you know, this is ridiculous. You can't shoot 9 people, like, innocent bystanders, and get probation. And like, it should have never happened. You know, this, if we pulled up the murder history and then, I'm sorry, the shootings, all that, it's horrible. It's just, you know, he never looked us in the face. And I'm, thank God Bill McSween took this out of his hands. Like,
yes.
That's, you know, I don't want to deal with the other families I've been through. And he's made backdoor policies and deals behind there. Like, no way. So, you know, the decision we made yesterday as a family with the federal years was a choice that we think was right for us. And, people don't understand it. Why 75 years? Why 75 years only? Because it's 75 years with no chance of parole, no appeals. It's over. So he's eligible for release at 96 years old. So essentially life in prison. You know, we knew the death penalty was off the table about 2-3 years ago. It went to the Supreme Court. There was only 4 people on the panel. 2 said yes, 2 said no. It went to Merrick Garland. He shut it down. Never was going to happen anyway. Mm-hmm. But so this is essentially life in prison. But, you know, we know in our city when people say 40 to 80 years, well, guess what? That can change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that could be brought back up, and like, we're done with it. So that,
yes,
that is something that we need. You know, I've mentioned again, my interview yesterday or the day before, whenever I spoke, I don't want to be Maureen Faulkner. She's been dealing with this for 40 years. It's terrible. You know, I get a phone call with this update or that update or this cancellation. It's draining on us as a family. There's like no other way to put it. It's not closure. It's just, I mean, like, now we can't not stop seeing this guy's face in our, you know, it's terrible. but we're going to figure it out. That's for sure. And the other three in that room still have they've all pled out already, but their sentences will happen at a later date. One was next week; it already got canceled. But this was the main one for us getting this. He's a terrible, terrible human being in the streets of Philadelphia, whether he thinks it's continue or not. I said he's a serial killer. He's killed 4 people, 9 shootings altogether. That they know of. You know, who knows? Never thought twice about doing anything. And that's just how he was raised, what and who he was proud to be.
Yeah.
I said to him, you were a coward who shot behind a door. And, you know, and then you bragged about it on your prison walls. And, you know, and said, you know, terrible things like in rap videos and, you know, and I can't, you know, say the words he used, but like he was proud of what he did. And so listening to his defense attorney and even himself get up and try to act like there was any remorse at all was just ridiculous.
We're talking to Terry O'Connor, widow of Philadelphia Police Corporal James O'Connor. I just wonder, you know, with everything you're saying, Terry, and we just, if you're watching on YouTube, on our streaming site, you know, your own son is a Philadelphia police officer. You know, have you said to your son, I mean, your daughter's in the military, but especially your son, to say, hey, why don't you apply for one of those suburban police jobs? I mean, you know, I know he's an adult and you, as a mom, I'm just saying, I have to wonder if you feel like the culture in Philadelphia still feels like it's anti-cop.
Are you? Well, so my husband, his father was a cop for 40 years. My husband, you know, followed in the footsteps, and then my son, always same thing. He wanted. That's all he wanted. You know, we have many family, friends, cousins, everything. And he just loved the stories. He couldn't wait to do that job. He was very excited to become an officer. It's all he wanted. Obviously, I think he had 3 years on the job when everything happened right now. And then COVID on top of it. Everything's COVID now with Jim, you know, that all, you know, so everything's shut down, including. So they put Jimmy, like, after some time off, they put him inside. And, you know, as they should have, in a way, you know, like, what can we do to make your life easy? But that's not what Jimmy wanted. He couldn't handle it. You know, he was young and he's just, you know, he likes to be busy and he wanted to do that job. And, you know, me and him sat and talked multiple times. And I guess it really just comes down to, you know, you don't know what tomorrow holds.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's out there. So he decided to go to K-9. So he's got a very vicious dog apparently he's friendly around us. I don't know. He still scares the heck out of me, but he's, you know, so Jimmy's protected by him and he's doing a job that he really likes. Like, I mean, you know, I used to say with my husband, you know, I was a dispatcher also for 10 years. And, I worked, you know, covering Jim's district at one point. It was kind of entertaining to be able to send him around, you know, but depending on the day when, you know, if I was mad, you know, anything, I joke, but true. But it was just, I don't know. It was what they wanted. Jimmy always wanted to go to SWAT and people would ask me, how do I deal with it? And I say, well, he's covered head to toe, right?
Mm-hmm.
Until you get shot in the one spot the vest doesn't cover. I don't know, but I can't live that way. Honestly, I'm scared for them, but you know, it's just, he needed to be happy and he wanted to be doing the job that he loves. So we think we found the right spot for him, you know, and God willing that he, you know, lives a long, happy life doing the career that he loves. And, but that's just how we are. We're, you know, everything's, you know, he uses caution more, you know, at that type of job, they're called in last, you know, it's usually for like a building search or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but he's happy and he's very happy he decided to do that. And, you know, that's where we're at. So I, you know, it's hard to think why, how, but mm-hmm. it's what he wanted to do. And like I said, he is an adult and he made the decision. So, you know, I just got to stand by him.
Terry, what, you know, I have to ask you, for you, you've been through it and it happened during the pandemic and we've covered it from that day. Like I said, Rich Scioli was still on the mornings at that point. I remember it vividly, just going through that and reporting on it. But for you now, with some closure here, what's next for you? I mean, have you thought about, for example, running for some level of office, becoming involved in nonprofits, pushing for these things in a formal manner. Have you thought about that?
I don't know exactly what to do. People have said that from the beginning. It's kind of like one of those things that are like, I didn't know you could, like, you know, speak so eloquently yes. and speak so, you know, and I'm like, I don't know. Like, where does that come from? I truly have no idea. But that's just how I've been. And one of the things I said yesterday is, like, in my impact, that he really took away, like, my sense of security and safety. And that's always so. And even when I do speak out, like, I'm scared a little bit sometimes. It's, you know, like, you're putting your name, your voice out there, your face. And I don't know. I don't stop, you know, so it's just, I always said, like, I became like an advocate for Jim and, you know, the police department, and that's just where I'm at. But I don't know exactly. I feel like we really need it yesterday over with. Now we all need some time to truly heal from that part of it, and we'll see from there.
Well, Terry O'Connor, you always have a platform here. There are no coincidences, so if you ever want to come on and hash it out, I think you're a powerful voice and maybe turn this grief that you still deal with, you know, and we've been praying for you, but I believe that you do have a powerful voice, and maybe there's something that can work toward, you know, positively influencing the public policy on how police are treated and moving forward a lot of the awareness issues that you've been talking about. Really appreciate you, Terry.
Well, thanks for having me. Yeah, anytime.
Thanks, Terry O'Connor. As now her journey, you know, from grieving widow and just really trying to cope and navigate through that, you know, as far as, you know, think about planning a funeral like that during the pandemic, all of that went on. And then remember, this happened in March of 2020. Here we are in July of 2025. You think about, you know, 5 years later, and consuming, you know, a person's life, a family's life. And so now as she moves on, we'll follow her. But I'm very serious. You know, we want her to come on as much as she would want to and maybe figure out her journey and maybe God's plan for her. So 855-839-1210, the number to call. Speaking of which, Sergeant Mark Fuzetti, you know, somebody who you know well, now has a new book out, but had called in, actually, he had been in the courtroom, and you probably heard it with Officer Mark Dial in those moments. So, police under fire, and will the culture change, and are these individuals who are caught up in it important voices to help with that change? We'll continue the conversation. Dan?
I don't mean to
I know, I heard you take the breath.
Yeah, no, because it's a breath of relief, because I've been speaking a lot with Terry these past couple of days,
yeah.
And 2 days ago, it was nerves. It was, you could tell that it's been weighing heavy on her,
yeah.
And hearing her today, I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know if it would be anger, frustration, but what it felt like was a weight off her shoulders and closure
mm-hmm.
and relief, and it's so nice to hear that such a wonderful family in the O'Connors finally
yeah.
feel that way after such a terrible situation.
Yeah, that, you know... But the can you believe that scumbag in court, you know, has to give the family a jab like that?
It'd be tough to sit there.
Yeah.
It would be.
And why did it take 5 years? You know, and thank God that Bill McSwain put it into the federal system to make sure that this guy, because I will say, you know, presidential pardon, you always do worry about that, because a president moving forward, a Democrat, could, God forbid, pardon somebody like that. I can't imagine they would. But other than that, when it's a federal sentence like that, the time is the time. It's not like the gain time. I always have to say that and clarify it, because that's why they wanted it in the federal system, so they can't get that gain time.
And it's got to be so relieving, because
mm-hmm.
you look at, and she mentioned her name, Maureen Faulkner,
yep.
who's dealt with year upon year of dealing with appeals from Mumia Abu-Jamal and supporters and such, and
mm-hmm.
just having to relive that day over and over again. Here you have a federal thing where it's 75
yeah.
years of just peace.
Yeah, and you think about how consuming it is. And Maureen and I talked about this on Sunday after she did the dunk tank. She's such a great sport. She's there with – so if you didn't know this about her, so she's the widow of Danny Faulkner back in the day. And it just – you know, here she was. They'd only been married less than 2 years. And so it impacted her whole life for many, many years. And finally, she met Paul. They got married. She moved out to California, has her beautiful daughter, Alexandria, who we've met over the years and who was here. But being here, you know, just watching her daughter, who's now in her early 20s, is somebody who has grown up learning the story and became very tearful when she talked about, because the family went back actually to where Danny was gunned down by then Wesley Cook, this little thug who was is a convicted cop killer, and you know, her daughter becoming tearful just thinking about that and what her mom has been through. And that's just it. For generations, families are grieving and affected by this. And that's the piece of it, you know, as Terry O'Connor was speaking about it, Dan, that's what it made me think of, as it just feels sometimes like these progressive DAs, they're more interested in hearing about some thug who's making the excuse that they had a single mom or a teen mom or whatever. What about the grief of a family for generations of law enforcement and what the hell that they've been put through?
It's something you could probably get into with Fusetti coming up, because look at all the they stopped live coverage to cover the Mark Dial resolution, the Eddie Irizarry situation.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, there's been complete silence from local media, besides NBC 10, which we played a great report from.
Yeah.
But that's it.
That's it.
And
Scarlett Johansson, kudos to her.
Yeah?
On KYW News Radio. She's very fair.
Okay, yeah.
So, Judy Cassidy was talking about that Sunday. So Dan and I always want to give credit where credit's due, right?
And it's just it's sad to see that a family as wonderful as the O'Connors don't get the coverage that they deserve. An Air Force daughter, a son in the Philly PD, following in his father's footsteps. They should be... There's a great movie out there for somebody to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Dawn, if you want to write a book and you and Larry have a movie in mind, this family is a heroic,
incredible.
Heroic family. Yeah.
855-839-1210. So Sergeant Mark Fusetti, he's around the corner, and we're going to update you on everything that's going on. There's a lot, so we'll fill in those gaps as well. Thanks for being here today. Be right back. The National Weather Service issuing heat advisories and extreme heat watches for what they call dangerously hot conditions. Sunny and mid-80s right now, but we're heating up to at least 90 degrees. Later in the day, we'll be watching for some scattered downpours, maybe some storms as a cold front approaches from the north and west. That's in the evening. But as we look to tomorrow, the hottest day of the week tomorrow, sunny skies with a high of 97 degrees. That would tie a record of 97 back in 2016. And then when you think about the humidity, what they call the feel like or the heat index, you're looking at, you know, feel like temperatures of 105 degrees. So a lot of warnings out there, especially if you work outside or if you're going to be outside. The weekends, scattered downpours, storms possible. Saturday afternoon, high of 93. But again, the heat indices look pretty high, reaching 100 degrees on your Saturday. So be careful, baby, as Mama Zioli always says, right? Just want to bring you that weather forecast as we look to the skies today. And whether you're hitting the beach, oh, wouldn't that be nice to be on a beach right now? And obviously it's cooler at the shore, or cruising through the city this summer.
Oh, be careful, baby.
But whatever you're doing, we want you to do it in style. The Honda Summer of Performance event is going on right now at my favorite Honda dealers, Piazza. Piazza Honda. Right now is the time to get behind the wheel of a new Honda Civic, Accord. What about a CRV with the unbeatable leases and low financing rates? Hurry in. These summer savings, they won't last. Drive to Piazza Honda of Philadelphia, Langhorne, Pottstown, Reading, or Springfield today. You can always shop online, piazzahonda.com, P-I-A-Z-Z-A, piazzahonda.com. I drive the HRV. Lair Bear, my husband, has the CRV. Michael has the Civic. I mean, we're like a Honda family. We love the Hondas, and it's no surprise to us that they get all of these best performance awards. But Piazza Honda, piazzaautogroup.com. Thank you so much, Honda and Piazza Honda, for sponsoring us. Let them know Dawn sent you. Dan Borowski now has the...
I'm a sergeant in the Philadelphia police.
Put his overcoat on. He's like Columbo with a cigar or something. Mark Fusetti. Sergeant Mark Fusetti. New book. Man, what a couple of weeks as we talk to you, you know,
Congrats, brother.
Congratulations on the new book.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
So I know
it's been a wild couple of weeks.
I know it had like, I think about this with law enforcement. It feels like a roller coaster because we had, and it was emotional with former officer Mark Dial and thinking about what he'll do with his life, his whole family, that whole thing. And then this week with all the emotion, the convicted scumbag as he sneers at a grieving family yesterday. That's just outrageous and disrespectful. Just your thoughts, and we'll talk about the book in a moment, but just your thoughts with what Terry O'Connor just said live. As and you can just hear it, and Dan and I were talking about it, you know, during the commercial break, Mark, and that is just, you know, you could, Dan said it was like a therapy session almost. You can just hear the grief and the sense of relief and just the hell that she and her family and the law enforcement community have been through over the past 5 years just in this one case.
Yeah, and yeah, I was listening, and you know, the one of the biggest problems, this could have all been avoided. That's the saddest part. It could have all been avoided if Krasner just stopped, you know, cuddling these criminals and just letting them be, let them do whatever, run all across this city, and you know, causing mayhem and destruction, death. This is he is responsible for all of this. There's nobody else responsible. I mean, the person that commits the crime is ultimately responsible for doing that action. But, you know, when you are allowed to thrive in that environment, as these criminals have been for the last, you know, what'll now be 9 years coming up when he wins again, it's he has to look in the mirror one day and say, you know what, some of this is my fault.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I allow these, you know, criminals to get a slap on the wrist over and over and over. So what do you think is, this is what drives me nuts with the voters in this city. What do you think, why do you think this crime is always going to be this way? Why do you think the city is going to always be this violent?
Mm-hmm.
Because a criminal gets away with it today, and they're like, oh, no repercussions. I'll go do something a little more dangerous, or, you know, something that can make me a little more money. Oh, got caught again. Still no punishment. Here I am 15 arrests later, still nothing. And then, you know, they're faced with the day where now murder warrants come. And even those murders, with a lot of, see, the other thing is a lot of people don't realize in court how many people, you know, the cops will arrest somebody for murder, but how many people get off for that murder?
Mm-hmm.
We don't hear about that. You really rarely hear about how many people that are let go because a witness doesn't show up, or, you know, a technicality, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. And they're out doing it again and again and again. And these guys were no different.
Yeah, it's discouraging, and I don't think that people realize the cause and effect of all of it. Businesses leaving, especially, obviously there's the pandemic and all of that, but the defund the police movement. What's the number? We're down with the retirements, you know, in Philadelphia. Are we still down the last count I heard was like 1,200.
I've been asked by somebody in there to not give out the number because it could, be dangerous, but it's critical.
Yeah.
And it will be. And, you know, I think they just had 80 kids or 80 people just graduate or are graduating this week, or may have been last week. But for everyone that graduates, they're losing twice that this whole year. And, you know, it's a city where, like, my son just came over from the Marines. He wants to be a cop. Wanted to be a Philly cop, but now he's like, you know what? I'll go out to the suburbs, make twice as much money.
Right.
With no, you know, with backing by your chief and your, you know, local politicians, where in Philly you just don't have it. And as we saw with, you know, Mark Dial, you had a district attorney that was hell-bent on getting a cop. Didn't care about the facts of the case, didn't care about the law. I'm going to get a cop. That was his goal. That was his mission. You know, he has briefly succeeded. I do believe if they appeal and he will win and, you know, ultimately if he would want to get his job back. That's my opinion. That is not something they've told me. But that's what cops have to face. A district attorney wants to hurt you, put you in prison for doing your job. Even if you make a mistake, he still wants to come after you and ruin your life. While on the same you know, with the same hand, he's shaking hands of criminals. Oh, you had a tough upbringing. You know, boo-hoo, poor you. Let me take it easy. Guess what? I had a tough upbringing, too. I grew up next to Whitehall Projects. That's where I hung out as a kid. You know, white, black, Hispanic. We all grew up together all the same way. We all had the same opportunity. We all had the same hardships. You know, growing up poor, no money, living in violence. And a lot of the people I grew up with all went out and are successful, white, black, Hispanic, everybody. You know, of course, somebody will stray here and there. But, you know, there's no excuse that, oh, it's what I was listening to with this scumbag was saying it in court. Oh, I grew up in violence. I've never been to a wedding. Yeah, we'll get better friends. We'll break.
So congratulations. I saw you put this out yesterday. Sergeant Mark Fusetti, which is at Mark, F-U-S-E-T-T-I, newly released Philly Warrant Unit. It's black and gray. There's your picture. You co-authored this book, and it's available on Amazon. You've got the hardcover, the whole thing, Kindle. I mean, this is legit. The cover looks beautiful. Take us through the newly released book and why you thought it was important to write it.
So the person I wrote it with is my childhood friend, Tristan. So, again, he grew up with me in the same place. We grew up in Frankfort. He grew up on Bridge Street. I grew up on the street behind him, Granite Street. We grew up playing football, baseball, basketball, Whitehall Projects, you know, Whitehall Playground. That's where we grew up. And we always, you know, we took different paths as we grew up. He went to law school. He's got, I think, 5 or 6 master's degrees, a law degree. I didn't want to go to college. I didn't want to do any of that. You know, we played sports together. We hung out together. We did everything together. And then finally, later in life, we were able to work together at the warrant unit for a couple of years. He went on to law school after that while I stayed. And while we were there, it was like, wow. You know, we would do these jobs. We'd have these crazy adventures. And it was like we were kids again. You know, except there was something positive. We were, you know, sometimes helping people, even though we were arresting them, we were helping them with their lives. You know, but we're making, you know, neighborhoods safer. We were playing a small part in that. And a lot of the jobs that we would do, just we would tell people, you know, this is what happened on this job on this night. And in no way that didn't happen. And it was one of these situations where we would all hang out. Your team would hang out on weekends or whatever, you know, to decompress. And we retell the stories that are in the book. And we're still amazing ourselves. Like, can you believe this happened? I feel like one of the stories where me and my lieutenant chased a transgender prostitute down on the subway, on the Broad Street subway. And as we're in between two stations, a mile in on the tracks, we can't find him or her. And a train comes. And I'm like, what? Here comes a train. And I'm flashing my light for him to stop, but the train doesn't stop. And he flies by. I go home later on that night. Do you know there's on the news a PSA about if you're ever stuck on the railroad tracks, what to do? And my, you know, my foolishness was doing my flashlight the way where you're telling the train to come through. And if I did it the opposite way, he would have stopped. So they were just like some of the crazy little adventures that happened day in and day out. I think we have like 40 some stories in there. Doesn't even touch. There were so many stories I just forgot as we're writing the book. I forgot about that story. We're like, all right, we'll save it for the next one. We'll save it for the next one. And that was the goal. Like, let's just do it. And, you know, we've had some bites from production companies that want to do a documentary on a couple stories. We're trying to, like I said, fund a pilot episode. I have somebody who wants to film it, pitch it to Netflix. They think we have something. So that was it. We're like, you know what? We're getting up there. Let's do it. In the worst case, hey, we wrote a book. And, you know, worst thing that's happened in life.
Yeah. So, no, congratulations. It's huge. I reposted your book, what you had put out there. And I said, modern day Philly version of The Wire, which I never saw. I confess, I never saw The Wire. I don't know how I missed it, but I'm watching it with my sons right now and we love it. But this is kind of, you know, the behind the scenes of, you know, the neighborhood stories and what law enforcement goes through and interactions with, you know, the people that you interact with, good, bad, the ugly. I mean, is that, you know, when you think about it, is that something that you also can bring forth awareness about as far as from a law enforcement perspective?
Well, it's one in there. There's a section where we talk about the people that we grew up with that we would have to arrest. Mm. You know, one of my better friends in life, Guy Pete, who thankfully is, you know, recovered and doing well. This is a guy I grew up with, a guy, you know, taught me how to drive my first car, actually gave me my first car for $20. So that's a whole other story. But a guy that, you know, I admired, I always looked up to because he was older than me, that I had to arrest twice because I seen him on Kensington Ave, 90 pounds. There's a 220-pound muscle guy down to nothing, skin and bones. And I wasn't arresting him to make a stat or anything. It was like, I got to put you in jail so you survive. You died tonight and I didn't lock you up, they would kill me. And we had several of those encounters with people we grew up with friends. Some made it through. Unfortunately, you'll read in a book, a couple did not. You know, and that was, you know, part of, okay, I'm helping this person. And then we turned that into a lot of the stories you'll read about interactions with prostitutes or drug users that we would lock up. We were never locking it up to punish them. It was to help them. And, you know, and that's what we tried to do. In the beginning of your career, it's like, oh, let's go out, kick in doors, lock up everybody you see, and it's fun. But then eventually you know, the humane part of it says, okay, maybe we can do something here instead of just, you know, locking everybody up. Maybe we can steer somebody the right way. And there's been a few people that, you know, made it or still out today I've been in contact with. And unfortunately, you'll see, you'll read in a book, there's some that, you know, tried hard and just couldn't make it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, is there, as far as policing in America today, and with the viral videos and then the biased media, you know, is there any thought to have, I don't know, like a counter, social media website, whatever, to say this is, and that's kind of, you know, where you're going with your book, your life story and all of that. But I just feel like there needs to be a very public counter to everything that's happening publicly, because you look at some of these videos that go viral, and there's the Jacksonville, Florida case that we've talked a lot about, a traffic mm-hmm. stop, where this, you know, smart aleck guy, he's a college student, and he's defying police orders. He's legitimately violating several laws. That's, you know, that's not even being contested. And after multiple times and multiple cops being called in, finally they bust the window and pull him out. And yeah, they do punch him as he is he's defying police orders. And now it's a big case of, oh, this is police violence. And those are the stories that make the headlines. How do you feel we should counter that effectively?
You know, you need more voices that try, you know, get people in a case like that. You're going to have people left. They're going to scream one way. You're going to have people on the right scream mm-hmm. another way. And they're only going to yell to their audience. You need people that are down the middle, look at everything from both sides. You need more voices like that. I like to think I am a person down the middle. You know, I agree with Democrats and Republicans on a lot of things, and I disagree on a lot with both of them as well. It's why I try to speak up for a lot of my friends that are still, you know, in the police department, because they can't, you know. That's why I was screaming from the mountaintops for Officer Dial, because it wasn't a crime. And everybody knew it. But mm-hmm. this is an outrage environment we live in now, where these college kids go on YouTube and watch some lawyer saying, hey, you don't have to do this when you get pulled over for this, that, or the other. And they turn on their camera and they're going to say, let's get a viral moment here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's what happens.
And so do you, you know, as far as people like Officer Mark Dial. Now, here's the thing. I've covered so many police officers. I think of Joe Bologna. I mean, there's so many who at the end of the day were exonerated. But in the mush of the middle, in the years that your life is interrupted and dominated, mm-hmm. even as law enforcement, if you're exonerated, your career is still, you know, ruined, I'll say. And so for somebody like Mark Dial, where does he go from here? I mean, if that's all you know, like you've said, with so many people, and Terry just told us, I mean, her husband's shot and murdered on the job, executed on the job, yep. if you will. Now her son is a Philly cop. Do you know what I'm saying? It's like there's a culture here, but what do you say to all of that?
It's almost, what can you, you know? I talked to Mark briefly after all this. I know it's still been an emotional whirlwind for him. You don't know what to do. I'm sure, you know, he's got a lot of friends and family and support where he will be okay. I still believe, and again, it's easy for me. I don't have to pay lawyers, but I still believe that if there's an appeal process and it's granted, that this conviction would be overturned. And for people that weren't in the courtroom, if you were in the courtroom listening to the judge that day, mm-hmm. he 100% did not believe that this should have been a conviction either. The jury got it wrong. That's not to say they did something. They didn't do their job, but juries get it wrong, and they did. And for him and for others that have had their lives turned upside down by Krasner, I pray for them all, hoping yeah. that they can, you know, find that next step and move on peacefully and safely too.
And then my next question is, and this is just in light of thinking about robotics, artificial intelligence, that's in the national headlines right now. There's a lot out there, and you think of futuristic movies. So in essence, when we have the Defund the Police movement, we've talked about that, the results of that, then how much of new technology do you think helps supplement some of this? And whether that technology looks like in the form of drones, and this really gets into some interesting areas, Mark, because now when you think about drones and you think about the use of different technology, even stuff like, remember we had talked about this as a real thing where they're testing this in certain markets where it's almost like the Spider-Man web. So like throw it over a suspect so you don't have the contact. There's no, the police officer then can't be accused of anything.
Yeah,
how much do you see with technology and even police robots, RoboCops, what could possibly go wrong, as Yoli always says, but how much of that do you see in the future?
I'm all about, you know, police evolving. You know, I was part of a department for 10 years, went in there one way. When I left, it was completely different. But you're always going to need a man or a woman out there responding, you know, because nothing beats a well-trained officer that approaches a scene and can save the day. You know, technology, things can happen. Things can go wrong. I actually seen a police training with drones, and I won't say where and what township. I don't want to embarrass them, but they crashed into each other, and it was pretty funny. So, you know, with technology, like all of us, then we got to evolve to that technology. We got to learn it, and then we got to figure it out, and then they got to master it, and then the next thing comes along. Whereas good old-fashioned police work, getting out there, keeping your eyes open, talking to the community, nothing will ever beat that.
Oh, you know what? Dan just told me this. We're just seeing TMZ is reporting that wrestling legend Hulk Hogan, it's just announced he is dead at the age of 71.
Terry.
I've just seen something about him yesterday. They said he wasn't in good health. That's terrible.
Sorry to break up your...
Sorry,
you guys are having a fantastic
just,
interview, but it's all over. It's
everywhere.
Wow.
71.
Rest in peace, Hulk.
Yeah. I mean, we saw him at so many different Trump Force 47 events. He looked great then, so I don't know the whole story,
but it's terrible.
So it's a breaking news story that's happening right now. Wrestling legend Hulk Hogan dies at the age of 71, and I don't know if family is confirming this right now, but I believe that they are. Jeez.
TMZ reports that it's pretty accurate. It's good to go. Funny usually, but not this one.
I know.
That's a shame.
God.
I'm sure coming up next, Tony, we'll have a bunch on that because being a Florida guy down there, Terry is a legend. Hulk Hogan's a legend down in Florida, so I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. Clearwater. I've been to his store, been to his restaurant.
Jeez. Yeah.
That's a shame.
That's so sad to hear. Listen, we'll continue the conversation. I know Greg Stocker and Nick Kale were saying, you know, for the morning show, you know, we want to continue the conversation, have you speak more about the book and what you're up to and just your great perspectives. But huge yep. congratulations from all of us on this book. It's a great accomplishment.
Thank you so much. And I will be bringing some down next week for you guys.
Oh, thank you. We appreciate it. Sergeant Mark Fuzetti, really appreciate his perspective and all of his service and his son's military service as well. I always repost. I mean, I know he's proud of the book, but proudest of, you know, the kids and his son. So reacting in real time, we got Tony Bruno standing by in for Dom Giordano. And Tony Bruno, we're just seeing the breaking news. Hulk Hogan dead at 71 years young.
Yeah, it's shocking because, you know, we keep seeing him on TV. He makes a lot of appearances and still rips off the shirt. And as you know, and as Mark just pointed out, you know, one of the Tampa Bay area, Clearwater area legends, so many of the wrestling greats live down here in the Tampa Bay, Southwest Florida, Central Florida, all over the place, but mostly, you know, in the Tampa area. That's huge. Tampa, Clearwater, all the people in Philly know exactly where those areas are because they come down here a lot, certainly, and that's north of us. But certainly shocking news. I wasn't even aware because the last time I saw him, he was good.
Yeah, they're saying that all of a sudden police cars, first responders, ambulances outside his home, and he was carried out on a stretcher. His wife, Skye, apparently, you know, the family saying it was cardiac arrest, some kind of a heart attack. And that's the limited information. It's a breaking news story. Tony Bruno, what do you have?
I am a real American. Fight for the rights of...
Sorry, that was my bad.
Well, we'll talk about Hulk Hogan, certainly. And I know Nick Cale's a big... I mean, you don't even have to be a wrestling fan to understand, you know, the impact that Hulk Hogan had, not just on wrestling, but on young people. When wrestling was dying, you know, that era came back in and reignited. I mean, that's when the WWE, I remember I was in New York in the 80s when Hulk Hogan came to the studio, and that's everybody. He was like, he couldn't walk into a building without looking at Hulk Hogan. One of the all-time legends, 71 years young, and we're seeing so many people leave us in the 70s right now. The last couple of days, 73, 76. Yeah. And so when I hit, you know, you hit your 70s, you don't think everybody's going to die. So that's why you have to enjoy life every day. We'll talk a lot about that. We got so many other things to get to today. May the View, is it The View on the verge of being canceled too? Oh. We have breaking news on that, Dawn.
Whoa.
And the latest on Colbert doing something that no other employee could ever do after they've been fired. Stay on the air and rip their employers. Could you imagine that, Dawn?
They would never let us do it, that's for sure.
No, they would walk us right out of the building. They already did to me back in 1990.
Well, Tony Bruno, Miss Robin, great show. Stay right there.
Dawn Stensland from Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.